Saga Egmont presents A Twist in the Tale by Geoffrey Archer. Read by Leighton Pugh and Joan Walker. Author's note. Of these 12 short stories gathered in my travels from Tokyo to Trumpington, 10 are based on known incidents, some embellished with considerable license. Only 2 are totally the result of my own imagination. I would like to thank all those people who allowed me to learn some of their innermost secrets. J.A., September 1988.
The Perfect Murder.
If I hadn't changed my mind that night, I would never have found out the truth. I couldn't believe that Carla had slept with another man, that she had lied about her love for me, and that I might be second or even third in her affections. Carla had phoned me at the office during the day, something I had told her not to do, but since I also warned her never to call me at home, she hadn't been left with a lot of choice. As it turned out, all she had wanted to let me know was that she wouldn't be able to make it for what the French so decorously call a cinq-à-sept. She had to visit her sister in Fulham, who'd been taken ill, she explained. I was disappointed. It had been another depressing day, and now I was being asked to forego the one thing that would have made it bearable. "I thought you didn't get on well with your sister," I said tartly. There was no immediate reply from the other end. Eventually, Carla asked, "Shall we make it next Tuesday, the usual time?" "I don't know if that's convenient," I said. "I'll call you on Monday when I know what my plans are." I put down the receiver. Wearily, I phoned my wife to let her know I was on the way home, something I usually did from the phone box outside Carla's flat. It was a trick I often used, to make Elizabeth feel she knew where I was every moment of the day. Most of the office staff had already left for the night, so I gathered together some papers I could work on at home. Since the new company had taken us over 6 months ago, the management had not only sacked my number 2 in the accounts department, but expected me to cover his work as well as my own. I was hardly in a position to complain, since my new boss made it abundantly clear that if I didn't like the arrangement, I should feel free to seek employment elsewhere. I might have too, but I couldn't think of many firms that would readily take on a man who had reached that magic age somewhere between the sought-after and the available. As I drove out of the office car park and joined the evening rush hour, I began to regret having been so sharp with Carla. After all, the role of the other woman was hardly one she delighted in. The feeling of guilt persisted, so that when I reached the corner of Sloane Square, I jumped out of my car and ran across the road. "A dozen roses," I said, fumbling with my wallet. A man who must have made his profit from lovers selected 12 unopened buds without comment. My choice didn't show a great deal of imagination, but at least Carla would know I'd tried. I drove on towards her flat, hoping she had not yet left for her sisters, that perhaps we might even find time for a quick drink. Then I remembered that I had already told my wife I was on the way home. A few minutes' delay could be explained by a traffic jam, but that lame excuse could hardly cover my staying on for a drink. When I arrived at Carla's home, I had the usual trouble finding a parking space, until I spotted a gap that would just take a rover, opposite the paper shop. I stopped and would have backed into the space, had I not noticed a man coming out of the entrance to her block of flats. I wouldn't have given it a second thought if Carla hadn't followed him a moment later. She stood there in the doorway, wearing a loose blue housecoat. She leaned forward to give her departing visitor a kiss that could hardly have been described as sisterly. As she closed the door, I drove my car round the corner and double-parked. I watched the man in my rear-view mirror as he crossed the road, went into the newsagent, and a few moments later reappeared with an evening paper and what looked like a packet of cigarettes. He walked to his car, a blue BMW, stopped to remove a parking ticket from his windscreen, and appeared to curse. How long had the BMW been there? I even began to wonder if he'd been with...